way we grow and produce food is ever-changing, shaped by consumers and the climate in which we live and farm. Research at all points of our food system is essential for continuously improving food's journey from farm to table. The Manitoba Agriculture and Food Knowledge Exchange explores timely research innovations and applications that make our food system better than ever. Join us for today's podcast.
Welcome to the Manitoba Agriculture and Food Knowledge Exchange podcast. I'm Jordan Sisiwa, and you've tuned in to one of those episodes that's going to be, well, it should hopefully set the base for your decisions in a few places for health and wellness. We're going to be talking protein. And thanks to the University of Manitoba Faculty of Agricultural and Food Sciences, we've got somebody who is leading a ton of innovative research around protein, sustainability in protein, plant-based protein, animal-based protein. Just a guy that knows the macronutrient protein, Dr. Jim House. Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thanks, Jordan. Happy to be here.
I'm, as somebody that played a ton of sports and then went into the high-performance sport training, I am so excited. The amount of misconceptions or thoughts around protein is something that once I went to university and did the kinesiology degree, I started to realize just how little I knew about protein. So let's start with the simple question. What is protein?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question to ask because the word protein is being used all the time right now, and it's really hot area. If you want to talk from a very fundamental standpoint, protein is a nutrient. We need protein in our diet. In actual fact, we don't actually need protein, but we need the building blocks that make up that protein. And those building blocks are called amino acids. And so from the very basic level, protein is a molecule that consists of a number of different amino acids. There's about 20 of them that make up any given protein that's found in our diet. And we require varying levels of protein depending on our age, depending on our sex, depending on our activity level. So protein is a nutrient, and it's very, very important that we reflect on the type and the quality and the amounts of protein that are in our diet. Another area where protein is becoming, the word protein is used, is more in reference to foods as well. So we're starting to see this transition away from protein being considered just a nutrient, but sort of as a food class, because you hear it talking about protein foods. And we're not so much concerned about the nutrient there, but more or less what makes up this protein food. So very interesting era of looking at protein right now, and lots of things on the go.
Well, and you touched on something there briefly, the quality of protein. So let's go to that for a moment, because that is something of interest to me. Because if I'm going to eat something, I want it to be the most beneficial thing that I can get my hands on. So let's talk about quality of protein and how to make the best choices.
Sure. Okay. So protein, typically when we're talking about protein quality, what we're really talking about is how well the amino acids that are in that protein match up against what we need in our diet. But we also need to factor in how digestible that protein is. So there's really two components. There's the amino acid composition, and then there's the extent to which those amino acids are digested and absorbed and made available to make proteins within our own bodies. And so those two components make up protein quality, and different foods have different quality estimates. And so if we think of sort of a classic high-quality protein, the standard references that we would use would be an egg protein, milk protein. Animal-based proteins are typically of high quality because they have the right balance of amino acids, and they're normally highly digestible. And so I always say that animal proteins are high quality because they either were an animal or about to become an animal. And so they're meant to support the growth of humans or other animals. Now, you compare that against other dietary sources of protein. And so if we're thinking plant-based proteins, the difference between plant-based proteins and animal-based proteins is that plants have a different composition of amino acids, so they may or may not be balanced relative to what we need in our diet. And there may be factors that influence how digestible those proteins are. So plants have cell walls that can trap the nutrients inside, so we have to break those down. Our digestive systems can do that, but we can also do that through processing, for example, to help break down the structures that can limit the digestibility of nutrients. So you've got to find that right balance of amino acid composition and digestibility. Now, there's a way to do that with plant-based proteins, and it's called protein complementation. It's taking two sources of plant-based proteins and mixing them together so that they complement each other. I can give you a classic example if you like. You think about beans and rice. Beans and rice are a staple in a lot of South American diets, and beans happen to have a really good amino acid profile, but they're limiting in an amino acid called the sulfur amino acids. Cereal grains, when rice is an example of a cereal grain, tend to be limiting in another type of amino acid called lysine. But if you put the two together and you consume them at the same time, they balance each other out. And so that's called protein complementation. And that's really an important area of knowledge and discovery right now.
And is that something where, with protein complementation, has that been a recent discovery for scientists, or is that something we knew about for a while?
No, it's been known for years. And then in fact, and we've been doing it for thousands of years without really knowing what we're doing. Basically, taking a balance of different foods in our diet, it's less critical if you have a significant amount of animal-based protein in your diet. And so mostly in the Western countries, we tend not to think about protein complementation because roughly 65 to 75% of our protein in our diet is coming from animal-based protein sources. Whereas in other parts of the world, you might find that cereal grains and other plant-based sources are contributing the majority of the protein in the diet. And so we need to be mindful of that complementation is really important, particularly in areas where animal protein is not a major component of the diet.
And I guess that would lead to a big movement that in North America towards plant-based diets and a vegan lifestyle. So it is completely possible for someone to be healthy and full of nutrients based in that plant-based diet.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if you're talking about complementation of plant sources, it's all it takes is a little bit of knowledge in terms of what are the best partners in a diet. And so, again, if you're thinking about the classic partners of a legume or a pulse with a cereal, so beans and rice, corn and beans, you're looking at other wheat and other forms of pulses. So balancing legumes with cereal grains is a sort of classic complementation. And the way in which we eat in North America, if you're consuming sufficient calories and if you're consuming a variety of plant-based sources of protein, there's not typically a major issue with meeting your protein needs. You do have to make sure that you have variety, though, and that you're selecting the right partners. And that's an area where I think we need to do more work, is to make sure that the consumers really are informed. Now, the food sector is helping in this regard as well, because they're positioning new food products that consumers want to purchase and want to consume that take advantage of this concept as well. So you think about plant-based burgers that are available in the marketplace right now. A lot of these are based on soy protein. Soy protein is actually a very good balance of amino acids. It's typically a high quality protein But if people are wanting to get away from soy, which a lot of consumers are for allergen perspectives, a lot of new protein sources are coming out, or food products are coming made from pea proteins, for example. Peas, you need to balance that with another amino acid source in order to get that complementarity.
Yeah, and I love it because now we can jump into another part of this that is exciting as a Manitoban. But our province, as a powerhouse in protein, it is amazing what we are able to do, produce, and offer to the rest of the world. And if I'm not mistaken, some of your research is in sustainably producing these proteins.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. In terms of the powerhouse nature of the province, we've seen over $1 billion worth of investment in the last couple of years in the area of protein. And when you focus around plant protein, some of the research that I'm doing right now is helping industry come up with those right blends. So characterizing the proteins that they're developing so that they know what they have and that they know what to partner with in order to make those correct blends. And it may sound very academic to come up with these optimal blends, but there's a very practical reason why industry needs to do that. If I have a food product right now on the shelf and I want to label it as a source of protein or a good source of protein or an excellent source of protein, the use of those terms, source of protein, that's called a protein content claim. And Health Canada requires that all industry have data to support the quality of proteins when they're making those types of claims. And so the work that we do helps industry to come up with the data that they need to substantiate that their food product can be called a good source of protein. And that has really practical implications for the consumer, because then they can see on a product, on a label, that this product is a source of protein, a quality protein. So that's some of the research we're doing, is to generate new knowledge about factors influencing the quality of, in particular, plant-based proteins, so that we know how agronomic practices influence it, weather, environment, year, variation by year, that we know how genetics influences the protein content, so that we can help breeders, plant breeders, come up with new varietals that are better tailored to Manitoba that have higher protein content. And so we're working with soybean breeders, we're working with lentil breeders and pea breeders to help come up with new varieties that are higher not only content, but quality of protein, so that the industry and consumers can take advantage of it. And then finally, the processing, understanding the impact of processing on these quality parameters.
And let's take a look at kind of jumping back a few thoughts ago that you had with the discussion on what's next and how we're going. The Canadian Food Guide, when it came out, they had a strong position with encouraging more plant-based foods. And they went away from the food group the way I learned it.
Right. Yeah.
And went more into, I want to say broad strokes on, but making it make more sense and giving more freedom to the user, but still saying, here's what you should be doing. So talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, lots to talk about and unpackage there with the new food guide. I've been involved with lots of discussions around that. But certainly, when you're looking at it, it's meant to be a snapshot now of what an ideal dietary pattern would look like. And what the Health Canada would like you to think about is, you know, keep half of your plate as fruits and vegetables. Keep a quarter of your plate as whole grains and another quarter of your plate as protein foods. So that's what they want the ideal pattern to be like. Now, if you look at the picture on Canada's Food Guide, does that mean I have to have a little piece of tofu and a little piece of sweet potato? No. That picture is meant to just be a graphical representation of the potential for various foods to sit within those categories. The big shifts that have come within the Food Guide is, you no longer see a glass of milk in it. That was a very bold move by Health Canada, and not everybody's in agreement with that. But replacing that glass of milk with a glass of water certainly has implications for protein foods, because now the entire dairy category, meat and alternatives category, are now under one broad category called protein foods. So that's a new position for Health Canada, but I don't know if consumers really know what a protein food is. And so we're doing a significant amount of work with both in my own research program and working with other associations, including the Canadian Nutrition Society, to provide information to consumers about what are protein foods, what are differences between protein foods, and extend that knowledge to them about how to balance their protein food categories appropriately. Now, one of the biggest statements that they came out with, and there were several of them, but one that in particular was that encouraging consumers to eat, or Canadians to eat, more plant-based proteins, or proteins from plant-based sources. And I think there's a practical reason why Health Canada went that direction. In all honesty, Canadians are consuming roughly 70% on average of their diet, of their protein, is coming from animal sources. Is that the right ratio? I don't know. Is it less than that? Probably. But I don't know what the actual number should be. Should it be a 50-50 animal to plant? Should it be 30 animal, 70 plant? I don't think we have enough evidence to support one way or the other. What we do know is that the way Canadians are consuming those animal proteins likely means that they're also bringing in nutrients of other nutrients that we want to limit in our diet. And those include sodium, saturated fats, and added sugars. And so we need to be mindful of those nutrients of concern when we talk about protein foods, in particular around processed protein foods, and in particular the sodium and saturated fat content.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. So when we're looking for you, we find you most often around the University of Manitoba in the Faculty of Agricultural and Food Sciences. And I'm going to assume that that's somewhere where I'm going to find you for a while. What's next in the research, or what do you want to look at, and why, and what needs to come out of the research?
Sure. Well, we're definitely looking at understanding the broader food system, so all of the factors that can contribute to protein quality, in particularly in plant-based proteins, because, and I say this, animal proteins really don't need help in terms of improving quality. They're already there. Plant-based sources, we need to understand all of these processing factors and genetic and environmental factors that will influence protein content and quality. And so that's a lot of where my work is focused right now. We're developing new methods and new assays to measure protein quality to help the regulatory agencies, both in Canada and the U.S., to move to different methods to help industry be able to label foods as quality protein sources. We're also doing significant research to understand how consumers are eating protein and whether or not that protein quality is a factor that is having health implications. And so research that I'm collaborating with colleagues in Ontario is looking at understanding the intake of quality corrected protein in the Canadian diet. And so that research is coming in now, and I'm excited to see the results from that move forward.
Fascinating stuff. It really is. Protein in general, just like I said at the start, for me as an athlete, a former athlete, and somebody that works in the athletic stream, it used to be just that thing that you needed to build muscles, and now we're finding just what a backbone and a pillar to the whole health system it is. Dr. Jim House, pleasure having you on, and thanks so much for all that information.
Oh, thanks very much.